Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Hino's Home Show. So glad you joined us again this week. We are brought to you, as always, by the good folks over at the Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy or refinance a home, give them a call. They'll get you closed and back to life. They're at AccurateMTG.com. Joining me in the studio, as always, is the great Steve Kenny, mortgage processor extraordinaire.
Good to see you, Hino.
Good to see you, too. Well, we got a great show lined up for you guys this week. If you've ever thought about cutting the cord, getting rid of cable or your satellite, we've got a show for you here today that kind of gives you the ins and outs of what to look for and what your options are when you want to do that. There's a dizzying amount of options out there. Then we're going to give you a little update on kind of some of the mortgage-related stuff that's happened in the last week. There's been some changes, again, which might affect your plans if you're looking to buy or refinance a home. And then with all the stuff going on right now with people working from home and all the Zoom meetings and Microsoft Team meetings, everything over video, we put together some tips of how to make the most out of that, how to make the most out of your Zoom meetings. But first off, let's talk about cutting that cord. If you're still subscribing to satellite TV or cable like Comcast or something like that, you may have noticed that bill never really comes down. It just keeps going up and up. And a lot of people are trying to go towards the internet and kind of shave some costs, get things a little less expensive. You know, cable TV used to be the ultimate necessity. You had to have that if you wanted to have all the options as far as, you know, watching all the different cable channels. But yeah, you really don't need that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome how things have really come a long way from, you know, when Netflix first started and they were mailing out DVDs to everybody. And now it's, you know, one of the biggest streaming platforms in the world.
That's true. eMarketer, which is a publication that covers the cable TV industry, pay TV and that kind of thing. They say that the cable TV industry will have about 72.7 million subscribers by 2023. That's down from 100 million subscribers just a couple of years ago in 2015. So wow, it's trending down. People are jettisoning their cable subscriptions and their dish subscriptions. One of the reasons, of course, is because it's really expensive, but you also get a whole lot of channels that you probably aren't interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a big problem. You know, and something interesting I thought to kind of put this into perspective too, I looked this up actually right before we got on the air. So there's 128 million households in the United States.
Right.
So assuming they follow the same definition of household, that means just a few years ago, you know, coming down from 100 million, it was, I mean, 75% of the market, 70% of the market were signed up for all of these different services. Well, I shouldn't say all the different streaming services, but all of the cable TV and that sort of bundle, I guess, was really big a few years ago. So now it's down to 72 million. So, I mean, we're approaching like 50, 55%. Mm-hmm. So it's coming down a lot.
It is coming down. So obviously the given that you'll need in order to cut the cord is you'll need to have an internet connection. Definitely. However that happens, you know, whether you've got that through your, you know, cable company. I'm not even sure if Comcast will give you an internet subscription without getting cable TV. I'm not sure how that works with them. I've never had them before.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we have Comcast, just to, in full disclosure, I guess. We have Comcast, but we've only ever had them with one of the package bundles.
Okay.
And when we were in a previous house, actually, before we moved to Nashville, we lived in Franklin, and they gave us the option to either get cable and TV, which obviously we were in it for those, but to get a third option was basically free. So if you were to get a 3-pack bundle versus like a 2-pack bundle, I guess, I don't remember the verbiage they used, but they gave us the option between a security system and a phone.
Okay.
So we actually did the security system, and they gave us a bunch of sensors and stuff to put on the the windows and the doors and all that kind of stuff. So that was pretty cool. But then when we moved, we switched back to just having an extra phone, but we actually don't use the phone line. It just came free.
The problem with those bundles is they're always great for the first year, and then the price starts going up.
Yeah.
You know, because then they've got you locked in at that point. So one of the first things to look at if you're looking to cut the cord is to just stick with the over-the-air signals. Most TV networks broadcast in HD. They broadcast HD TV. So you need a special antenna that you can get to pull that into your TV. And there's a couple of different options for that. You can get a one that just plugs into the back of your TV. You can go high end and go all the way up to one that mounts on top of your house and is connected through a cable to your TV. Kind of like the old school antennas back in the day. but you are, most major cities broadcast in HD. So you can pull in all the basic stations, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, that kind of thing, and the PBS stations for free just by doing it that way. It's a little bit of a hassle getting it set up, but once you got it set up, you've got that option. One of the things that I think there's a company called Moho Leaf that makes one for about $17. It's not really that expensive.
And that's one of those little ones that goes in the window, right?
Yeah, it goes in the window. Then they have the little ones that just plug into the back of your TV. And if you wanted to go high-end, like I said, there's a company named Direct Clearstream that makes the 2 Max or the 4 Max model that have 60 or 70-mile ranges that you can, you know, pick up a lot of TV.
Wow.
In and around your area. So in the Nashville area, you'd basically be able to pick up all the local stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, at that point, you don't have a way to record things, so you know, most people don't have a VCR anymore, but you probably need some sort of DVR to be able to record the programs that you want to watch later. Yeah. So that's something to consider. But there's a couple options there. You can either buy one. Sling makes one where you can buy one, and then there's a monthly subscription. So it's like $300-some-odd to buy the box.
Wow.
And then a monthly subscription. So I'm not super sure that most people would be into that, but it is a one-time fee for the box itself, but then there's that ongoing $6 or $7 a month subscription.
Yeah, I feel like with any kind of technology, you don't want to invest a whole lot of money into it up front, because I mean, one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to come out with some new, more powerful platform and yours is going to become obsolete.
right.
Or they're going to sell the same thing in a year and the price is going to come down $100.
So. Yeah, that's always going to be the case. You know, yeah. I learned long ago that you don't always wait for the next latest, greatest thing because you'll never get it.
Yeah.
You know, like if you want the latest, greatest iPhone, you know, I just got the iPhone 11 here not too long ago when it was out first, you know, just came out. But we're only a few months away from the 12 coming out. So, I mean, no matter what you get, there's always something better just around the corner. Yeah. You know, so if you keep waiting, you'll never get anything. So right. You just got to dive in at some point.
Well, yeah. And actually, you know, unfortunately, my wife had to get a new phone because she had the same one for like 4 or 5 years. And so we bought, you know, one of the newer versions of the iPhone. I don't think it was the most crazy one.
Right.
But now, like in the last couple of weeks, they just came out with the iPhone SE that's like $400. Mm-hmm. And it's just as powerful as my phone.
It's a year ago. I hate that. Yeah, I know.
So we could have saved a lot of money if we just would have waited a little bit longer.
That happens. That happens. Well, okay. So we talked about the HD antenna. Another way to get some of your TV fix is to go with a smart TV or a media hub. So obviously you can access a lot of the internet stuff with your iPhone or your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, or even the TV itself, which is where a smart TV comes in. You can even look at things on your computer. If you've got a nice laptop or something, you can actually just connect your laptop to your TV if you've got an HDMI connection and use your laptop to find what you want to watch and then watch it up on your TV. So that's a pretty inexpensive way to go.
We actually used to use that method a couple of years ago, back when, you remember the blue cords that plug into computers?
Right.
We had a TV that had one of those, and so it won't play sound through the TV, just plugged in like separate speakers. So that way, you know, it was the video was coming through the TV and then the sound was coming out of the speakers, and it actually worked out really good. I mean, this was probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of before the whole smart TV thing happened, we just kind of got bored on a Saturday and tried to figure out how to make it work.
Okay. Well, that's the beauty of an HDMI cable, is it carries video and sound.
Yeah.
So if you have an HDMI port on your laptop, you can connect it to your TV and you're good to go. But if you don't happen to have a smart TV, or if it doesn't quite have the apps on it that you want, you can go with a hub. And there's things like, you know, the Apple TV box that you can buy. Amazon makes them, Amazon Fire, Amazon Chromecast makes them, Google makes one too. So there's different things that you can get that act as the bridge between the internet and your TV and allow you to access all the apps that you want to watch, you know, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, so on and so forth. We're going to get into that in the next segment. There's an amazing amount of options there. Or you can even go even higher end, like Amazon Fire TV is like a 4K. So it's going to give you that full resolution. If you've got one of those high-end 4K TVs, you're going to want to make the most out of that.
Yeah.
Apple TV 4K, that one also does that. Roku makes one. They make an entire line of products, actually, that that fit that bill. So there's a, you can get that box, and they're not really that expensive. They range from about $20 for the lower end Chromecast ones, up to about maybe about $160, $170 for the Apple stuff, depending on which one you get.
Okay. So I have a question. You just rattled off, like, I don't know, 8 different kinds of things.
Yeah.
I'm not a technology person. So what advice would you give for, you know, a layman like me who's not really into technology? How do I figure out which one of these is right for me?
Well, that's the thing. They're all so similar. They really are. So you pretty much can't go wrong with any of them. So if you're an Apple person and you have iPhones and you have iMac, you know, you're going to want to maybe stick in that ecosystem because it all works together really nicely.
Okay.
Like, for example, if you've got an iPhone, you can just, anything you're seeing on your phone, you can just toss up onto your TV with AirPlay if you've got that Apple box. So it just makes it seamless. You can, hey, look at this picture that I just took on my phone, and you just throw it up on your TV and everybody can see it, that kind of thing.
Okay.
If you have Android set up, you know, you got PC and you've got Android phones, then maybe the Google Chromecast is the way to go because they have similar stuff for Androids.
Okay.
So it kind of depends on what you have. And then, of course, Amazon makes their stuff, and their stuff's pretty easy to use. They've kind of cornered the market on the whole Alexa thing. And if you want something where you can talk to it, the Alexa-enabled boxes where you can say, hey, Alexa, turn on, you know, I want to watch the news, or let me watch Home Improvement, or let me watch whatever show you want to watch. It'll just go put it on for you.
That's really cool. See, I was thinking you were going to have to buy like an Echo Dot separately and just, you know, put it in there and then...
No, they make them with them built in. So...
Cool.
Yeah.
Very
so,
cool.
I mean, pretty much everything's got Alexa built in these days. Hey, this new toaster just came out with Alexa built in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's awesome. So there's a lot of options there. So check those out. We're going to have to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk about all the different services that you can subscribe to, because there's a lot of things out there that are similar and some very different. So come on back. Join us on Hino's Home Show. We'll be right back.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. 57 channels and nothing on. I do feel that way sometimes.
Yeah.
Only I've got way more than 57 channels, and there's still nothing on sometimes.
Yep, I agree with that one.
Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are brought to you by the Accurate Mortgage Group. Go visit them at accuratemtg.com. They'll get you closed and back to life. So we are talking cord cutting. What if you're just tired of paying that Comcast bill, Dish, DirecTV, whatever it is you have, and you're trying to explore the options of what if I did this all over the internet? Well, last segment we talked about kind of the hardware end of things, and now let's talk about some of the apps that you have available, because there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Personally, I did this probably about 6 months ago. I got rid of Dish, which I had for a long time, and I subscribed to a couple things, YouTube TV, which they only launched probably about a year ago.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like basic cable. It's got all the, for me anyway, it's got all the basic cable stuff that I normally watch and a few channels that I didn't have on Dish, like the tennis channel. We like that because my kids play tennis, so we watch a lot of tennis.
Nice.
So that wasn't something we had before, and it's a third the price. I mean, I was paying about $150 a month for Dish, and I'm down to $49.
Nice.
Well, $49.99, so $50.
Yeah,
for,
close enough.
It's always $99.99, right? for YouTube TV. So that save me a whole bunch of money right there.
Yeah.
And then when you add in, you know, your Netflix and some of the other things that we're going to go over, there's more to watch than you can possibly have time to to actually watch and still be a productive human being.
Right. Well, and so you got rid of Dish.
I did.
But you do have separate internet through some service provider.
Yeah,
right?
I have internet through my phone company. Always have. It's kind of a great deal because they throw in the phone for free. They know nobody wants to have a home phone anymore, a landline. So they just, all right, we'll give it to you for free if you get internet. So,
okay.
So I got my internet through them, and it's fiber, so it's nice and fast. So.
Okay.
So there's basically four different types of streaming apps. There's on-demand streaming apps, and that's where your Netflix will come in. Or Apple TV or Amazon Prime, those kind of things, because there you can go, there's a whole bunch of things to watch and you pick what you want to watch and you can watch it now. Then there's live TV streaming services like the YouTube TV that I just mentioned, where it's basically just broadcast TV, but over the internet. So it's the same stuff, but you have to wait till it comes on to watch it.
Okay.
Like you would if you were watching it over cable.
Okay.
Then there's TV provider apps. So a lot of the networks and movie studios are coming out with their own apps, you know, like CBS and that kind of thing.
HBO, Disney Plus.
And networks and actually right down to specific channels. Like, for instance, I mentioned the tennis channel earlier. They have their own app that you can subscribe to. So if you just wanted that and didn't want to watch anything else, you could just subscribe to the tennis channel app and watch that 24/7.
Interesting.
And so a lot of them have that. So there's a lot of choices. But really, the on-demand stuff is kind of the big one. That's Netflix. They have a lot of original content,
yeah.
A lot of licensed content from other studios, although that's starting to go away because all the other studios are seeing how much money they're making and they're pulling their content back.
And
like Disney did that. They took all of their stuff off Netflix and they started their own thing.
Yeah.
Then there's Hulu, which basically is all the broadcast stuff on the internet. So usually things show up on Hulu the next day after it airs on broadcast.
Okay.
But then there's Hulu Plus, which is basically kind of like YouTube TV where it's just live. You can watch it all live, all the different cable channels. Plus they have some original content and you can watch things later on demand.
Okay.
So that's kind of a neat thing. And then of course pretty much everybody's got Prime Video.
Yeah.
With Amazon. There's hardly anybody around who doesn't shop over Amazon these days. So so pretty much everybody's got Amazon Prime. They have a lot of original content, and you can also rent movies. Right now, especially because of the whole coronavirus thing, they're putting a lot of first-run movies on Amazon now that you can rent now that otherwise you would have to go to the theater and watch because
Really? Nobody's
going to the theater. So they're just putting them on there and you can just pay your $12 or $15 or whatever they're charging to watch some first run movies.
That's a cool idea. I really like that. You know, I think
that's probably going to stick around, I bet.
I think it will too. You know, and I was just going to say, actually, I think one of the coolest things that's come out of this very unfortunate situation we're living through is that there's a lot of innovating going on. And mm-hmm. So, you know, things like that, being able to watch feature films at home. I mean, my TV stereo, we have one of those little sound bars and mm-hmm. the subwoofer and all that. It's obviously not as good as the sound system at a theater, but it's good enough.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather just stay at home and watch a new movie at home, like just right. me and my wife sitting on the couch.
And you can pause it if you need to run and refresh your drink or whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah.
I don't have to pay $15 for popcorn.
Exactly. There's a couple of other ones that you may not have heard of. Crackle, that's one that's owned by Sony. And that one's free. They just inject their own ads in there. So it's ad supported. You're going to have to sit through some commercials, but it's free. So they have a whole lot of content and a lot of movies and that kind of thing. CBS All Access. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of that. So it's a little bit different, I think, than there's just this regular CBS app that just shows all the stuff that they show over the air. They have a lot of original content that they just have on CBS All Access.
Okay.
Like there's a Star Trek show, Picard. A reboot of the old Star Trek TV series from 20, 30 years ago, something like that. And you can only get that on their paid app. So
that actually makes a lot of sense because I was wondering what the difference was between just going on CBS.com, you know, which during March Madness, which we all missed out on this year.
Yeah.
March Madness, you have like four different windows up watching different basketball games because CBS is covering all of them.
Right.
And so, you know, that was always free. So it never made sense to me why they would do a separate app, but I guess the separate content.
Right.
And the ability to go watch stuff after the fact, I guess.
But if you're looking to just really replace the cable, you know, you're going to need a live streaming app.
Yeah.
More than just on demand. And there's YouTube TV, like the one that I subscribe to. That's about $45 a month. Then there's Hulu TV, Hulu with live TV, they call it. That's also $45 a month. And they both have about 75, 80 channels. So you'd have to go look on their website to see what channels they have and what interests you. The reason I chose YouTube TV is just because it had more of the channels that I liked versus some of the other ones.
Yeah. Because
at the end of the day, they were all the same price pretty much. So
yeah.
Within a dollar or two. Sling TV has one. They don't have as many channels. They've got a package with either 32 or 47 channels, but they're a little bit cheaper. They're about $25 a month.
Okay.
So that's something to look at. And then there's things that kind of come along with your boxes. If you've got an Xbox sitting in the house or a PlayStation, a lot of people don't know that, but you can watch TV through those things too. And they have subscription services for TV through your Xbox, through your PlayStation.
Wow.
Through your Nintendo.
You know, it's funny. I knew that you could like play Netflix or, you know, some of these other streaming services that have apps associated with them. Mm-hmm. I knew you could do that, but I didn't know that Sony had their own TV station. Well, not TV station, but TV
subscription service.
Subscription service. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not bad. It's a little bit more expensive. The Sony PlayStation one, it's about $50 a month, $49.99. It's got about 50 channels. And then they have some smaller or different packages for about $55 with 78 channels and on up to the ultra one with that includes Showtime. That's about $85 a month,
okay,
which is still a little bit cheaper than you would get on cable, but more expensive than what I have with the YouTube TV.
Yeah.
There's a company called Fubo TV, F-U-B-O. That's about $55 a month with about 116 channels.
What do you think Fubo stands for?
I don't. I think it was originally a soccer channel, so football, foosball, or something like that. And then they expanded out to other things.
That actually makes a lot of sense. That's pretty funny.
Philo, and then AT&T has one as well. So those are all ones that you can subscribe to. They're all very similar, but what you need to do is go and check out their websites of what channels they have, because they do carry very different channels. And then if there's a handful of channels that you like, that'll probably sway you which one you want to go to.
You know, here's really what in us talking about this, this is kind of what I'm taking away from it. We've now reached a point where everything is so much more customizable than it ever used to be before.
Yeah.
Because it used to be like there's two cable providers and right, you had to choose either Comcast or AT&T. And if you didn't like either one of them, tough.
Right. Movies, and you got your four packages to choose from that have everywhere from 20 channels to 200 channels.
Yeah.
And here's your price and here's what you get.
Right. And so now I can also look like, okay, well, I don't personally, but let's say you already had a PlayStation and you're thinking about doing this. You don't have to buy any extra equipment or anything.
Right.
You can just use what you've got and direct, the different services through that system.
That's the beauty about all of these, is that unlike a cable system or a satellite system, you can subscribe to these at will. So if you try Hulu for 1 month and you don't like it, it's really easy to just cancel that one and sign up with another one. Because once you log in and get your password in there, you're up and running. It's as simple as that. You don't have to like pack up a bunch of equipment to send back and schedule another installation and that kind of thing. So you can actually try these all out, you know, different months at a time and see which one you like.
And so they don't, I see it, you know, the stuff that we have listed here shows like per month or per year, but there's no... Like, you don't have to sign up for 12 months.
Mm-mm.
You could pay it all up front if you wanted to, I'm assuming.
Some of them have that option, but most of them don't. You just pay month by month, and like Netflix, you know, you just pay month by month, and if you don't want it anymore, you just stop it.
Yeah, that's cool. I do like that.
So we did a little bit of a rundown. If you were to sign up for a whole bunch of these, let's say YouTube TV with Netflix and Hulu, HBO Now, Showtime Stars, and CBS All Access, for example, we just picked a bunch. That would cost you right about $77 a month, or if you take that out for the whole year, that's about $934 a year. Compare that to what I was paying for Dish. I was paying about $150 a month. That came to about almost $1,800 a year.
Yeah.
So that's about half.
Yeah.
And it's way more customized to what I want. And you don't even need to get all those. You can cut that down and save even more money.
Well, and the reality is too, I mean, I said this earlier that we have Comcast and we have the cable package and all that kind of stuff, but we still have Netflix. We still have Amazon Prime Video. So, with these options, it can bring your cost down, but still get the same kind of coverage.
And the nice thing, I'll talk about YouTube just because I have that one. It's got DVR built into it.
Wow.
So, heck, that's great.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Listen, we need to take another quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show. So come on back. All right. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. Glad that you joined us. We're brought to you by the good folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. Check them out at accuratemtg.com. They'll get you closed and back to life. Joining me as always is Steve Kenny, mortgage processor extraordinaire. So, Steve, a lot of big changes at the last few weeks. It seems like every week there's some big changes in the mortgage industry, the housing industry, and kind of things that are affecting a lot of people right now.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, you know, I think it's going to continue this way for a little while until we kind of get back to everybody being fully open and things kind of go back to normal. So it has changed a lot recently, and I'm kind of expecting that it's going to keep going this way for a while.
So. Yeah, just to recap, a couple weeks ago, most government loans, all the, you know, VA, FHA, USDA, they raised their credit minimums. Up at first it was up to a 680 and now it's down to 660, but that's up from about 600 where it was, or even lower for some loans.
Yeah.
And so that made it harder for some people to qualify. So that, you know, we had people that qualified one day and then the next day they didn't. So
right.
It really kind of put a damper on some people's plans.
Well, yeah. And anytime we see some economic uncertainty, this is always what happens in the mortgage market. You know, the people who are more well qualified for loans, they're still going to be able to get loans.
Yeah, they're fine.
People that are kind of in that gray area where, you know, you're close enough and we can make it work, those are the people that really struggle and get pushed out of the market.
Because yeah, you were close enough 1 minute and the next minute you're not quite close enough. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So you know, and kind of looking at this in the context of all of this economic stimulus and all the stuff that's going on, you know, the stimulus bill got passed, or economic relief, I think is the term a lot of people are using. This got passed fairly quickly by historical standards. So like, if we look back at what happened during the Great Recession, I want to say it took several months for them being Congress
to hammer something out,
and figure out, okay, what are we going to do to help, you know, bump stop the market so that we don't just crash into the abyss, right? So this economic stimulus got passed in about 2 weeks. So they took that framework.
Which for Congress is lightning speed, right?
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is. So they took that framework from the Great Recession, as it's known. They took that framework and they basically said, okay, we know that we need to get the funding in place. It's going to cost us a lot of money. You know, let's allocate the funding and then let's figure out some of the details as we go along. So, you know, that's not always the best way to handle things, in my opinion. But hey, you know, they had to act fast and they had to do something and try and bring some stability. So that's what they landed on. So
right.
As we keep moving forward, we're going to see a lot of regulations or clarifications about how a lot of this stuff is going to work. And so recently, FHFA,
which is the Federal Housing Finance Administration.
Yes, which is a mouthful.
Yep.
So FHFA, which is different than FHA.
Yeah.
So those two things are different, even though they sound the same. So the FHFA came out and clarified some of the issues going on with servicers, which I know that we've talked a little bit about. So for people who have heard of this mortgage forbearance, you know, if you're affected by COVID-19, you can reach out to your servicer either by the phone or if you log in on your online account. They give you the option to suspend payments for up to 12 months.
Right.
Right.
Right. 3 months at a time.
Is that how it works? 3 months at a time?
Yeah, okay. I think it depends. A friend of mine did it and he said they got 3 months and then they could renew it for another 3 months up to 12.
Up to 12. Okay.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, you know, because
and he was saying it was super easy that he just called. It was like an automated thing called press one for this, press two for that. Boom, you're signed up.
That's
it was
scary.
That easy. So
that's scary.
It is a little scary. Yeah.
Yeah. So where this created a lot of uncertainty for the servicing community, you know, different companies, whether they have an individual department or if that's what the entire company does, they just service loans where they collect payments and then pay them to the investor. Well, for government loans, so like FHA, VA, USDA, those types of things, that servicer is required to make the payment to the investor regardless of whether or not the borrower actually makes the payment.
Right. So you can imagine if you've got, you know, tens of thousands of loans that you're servicing and all of a sudden half or more don't make their payment anymore, you're still on the hook for all that money.
Exactly. Yes. And there's not enough profit margin for them to be able to offset that. Like they
right.
don't just have a bunch of money sitting in an account that they can just, you know, send out payments.
Right.
So what the FHFA has come out and said is out of that 12 months, you know, that potentially allow people to put their loans into forbearance, out of that 12 months, servicers are only going to be required to make the first 4 payments out of that 12 months. And then at that point going forward, you know, the servicer is no longer required to make those payments. So
that'll help servicers not go under.
Exactly. And that's really the point. And so you know, as we kind of go through this and things continue to change, the whole point is to try and bring some stability to the market.
Like, yeah, the reasons rates have gone up, the reason qualification standards have changed is because of the instability and the uncertainty.
Right.
And so by doing this, they're kind of bringing some calming the seas, as it were, and hopefully that'll bring back qualification standards back to where they were before all this started, and just kind of settle everything down. Rates will come back down again, and everybody will be happy.
Right. Yeah. The best kind of market for lenders is stable.
Yeah.
You know, when things are predictable, we can project, you know, okay, here's where pricing is going to be, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just, right. Everything is way easier from a decision-making standpoint when there's consistency and expectations, and we can determine what it's going to look like 6 months from now.
Right. Well, speaking of predictable, human nature is kind of predictable. And I've heard stories of some real estate agents out there pitching to their clients, hey, let's go buy this house now, and then you don't have to make payments for the first year.
Oh, no.
And, you know, no, going in, you know, expecting to apply for that forbearance right from the get-go. Now, that's a bad idea.
Yes.
That's a very bad idea.
That is a very bad idea. And do you know where that's taking place? I don't think anybody in Nashville is doing that, right?
I'm not going to say, but I heard some people talking about it, and I was aghast, as it were.
Well, yeah, for you listeners out there, if you hear a realtor say that, do not recommend them to your friends.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Well, talk about why you don't want to do that.
Okay, so there's a couple of things that play into this. So one, and I'm going to get a little bit wonky on you, so you may have to do some translating for
me.
So when you take out a loan, any type of loan, whether it's a mortgage or a credit card or whatever it is, if you don't make the first payment that's due, the very first payment, that is a huge red flag for creditors, and that will hit your score really, really hard.
Yep.
So any situation, I mean, missing that first payment on if you sign up for one of those store cards, this actually happened to me about 10 years ago. Signed up for, actually, I think I was at Place Buying Tires. And they were like, hey, if you sign up for our credit card, like, you know, zero interest for 12 months, and, you know, tires are expensive. So like, hey, why not? Well, they ended up sending it to the wrong address. So I never got the card information. I kind of forgot about it and went through this whole rigmarole just to try and get that squared away because of how badly it affected my credit. And eventually I got them to fix it, but that was because they made a mistake. It wasn't because I made a mistake. So you have to be really careful with that. But so how this affects that situation of, you know, if I buy a house and I don't make six payments, well, that's going to hurt you from not making your first payment. And they're going to put a little little note in there, like borrower did not make first payment. And that's a big red flag. The other part of it is you're basically committing fraud.
Yeah, you know? Because you're going into it with knowing that you're not going to make those first payments.
Right. Yeah, and you know, fraud's kind of a dirty word in our industry. Yeah. Nobody likes to talk about, but I mean that pretty much is fraud, because it goes down to intent. Like, we are lending you money under the premise that you're going to pay us back.
Right.
So if you go into this loan transaction without the intent of actually paying the money back,
right,
like, you're violating our agreement.
And some mortgage companies have it written in their contracts that if you do that, they reserve the right to foreclose on you.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and housing laws are different in every state, but, you know, you might be in for a lengthy court battle, but I mean, it's just not worth it.
You just don't want to go down that road. Yeah. If you're going to buy a house, obviously you can afford to buy the house. Just do it the right way.
Yeah.
Do it the right way and don't play games with it.
Yeah, be truthful and honest.
It actually hurts the rest of us, too, because it hurts the market at large. Because it goes back to that stability thing that we were talking about earlier. An unstable market hurts the entire economy and hurts everybody looking to buy a house or refinance a house. And so if you're contributing to the problem, you just don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, no, don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that having been said, it is a good time to be looking for a home right now. I mean, if you're in a position where you can afford to buy a house and you got the down payment, you got everything squared away, there's not much competition out there right now. You know, this time last year, or any time usually before all this happened, if you went and made an offer on a house, chances are there were 3, 4, 5 other offers on that same house at the same time, and you had a competitive battle going on.
Yeah.
Well, now not so much, because a lot of people are just kind of holding back again because of the uncertainty. So if you're in a position to be able to buy a house, now's kind of a good time. Not a whole lot of competition. You might actually be able to get the house that you want.
If you find somebody who really needs to get out of their house right now and they're not getting a lot of offers like we're used to in Nashville, you might be able to negotiate down a little bit. But the big thing, especially for, you know, the Nashville metro area, is that you're not having that competition like you normally would.
That's right. That's right. Listen, we got to take another quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to give you some tips on those inevitable Zoom calls that you're now all doing because of all the working from home. All the meetings are happening over the internet and over video. So how do you make the most of that? Come back and we'll find out here on High Nose Home Show. Come on back. All right, welcome back to High Nose Home Show. We are brought to you by the Accurate Mortgage Group. Check them out at accuratemtg.com. Okay, Zoomer, if you're out there doing Zoom phone calls because of all the meetings that you're having at home, working from home, we got some tips for you because this is new to a lot of people. They're not used to this. In fact, some of the Zoom calls that I'm on, and you too, Steve, Steve Kenny, joining me here in the studio, there's probably about 40, 50 people on the call. And out of those, maybe 6 have their cameras turned on.
That's true.
Everybody else is too shy.
Yes. I will say I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
But I did.
I'm looking at you, Steve.
I know. I did put my picture in place so at least people can see my face. It's just
right.
Not...
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But, you know, so a lot of companies are adapting to this and they're doing the Zoom calls. I think, you know, personally, I think that there's quite a possibility that this whole COVID thing was actually engineered by the Zoom people because it's been pretty good for them. I would not be surprised to find out down the road that it's like, oh yeah, this was all a big conspiracy by the Zoom video people. But
yeah.
But yeah, a lot of schools are doing that. The companies are doing that to do their meetings. So a couple of things that a lot of people don't know about. In fact, I've run across a couple of people in our company who didn't know this. By default, Zoom just focuses on the person speaking. So whoever's speaking, that's whose face pops up on the screen and dominates the screen. But there is actually a way to see everybody. If you go up to the right-hand corner and click on the little menu, there's something called a gallery view where it shows you kind of a grid pattern of everybody's face, if they're showing their face. and then there's just a little yellow line highlight around the person who's actually speaking at that moment. That way you can kind of see everybody and see how bored everybody else is.
Yeah. Well, you know, also along with that feature, I just came across this recently, actually. I'm probably a call you and I were on. You can set it so that it hides all of the non-video people.
Yeah, it does that by default, I think. So the people who are actually showing video are going to be on the first page.
Got it. Okay. So that way you can see, like, at least the people who are on camera, you can see them.
And right.
I usually, if we're doing like a conference call where we've got like one person who's speaking for an extended period of time, I usually try to make that person the big one and mm-hmm. you can pin whoever you want to be that main screen. And then it's got the yellow thing around it like you were talking about. And then I can see some other people. But if I'm just doing it with like my family or my friends or whoever, then I always use that grid view because I want to see what everybody's doing.
Yeah, you want to see everybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, we just did one. I did one with a bunch of college classmates of mine, and we did a little reunion a couple weekends ago, and we did it on Zoom, and, you know, you want to see everybody at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
And also, too, Zoom, if you're listening, because this drives me nuts. And I'm sure it's not just Zoom, but let's say I'm using this on my laptop, right? Well, if I'm using the laptop camera, it's usually, you know, right at the top of the screen in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. Well, for some reason, Zoom always puts me like right under the camera. And so I would rather if it like put other people closer to where the camera is so I can look at them and also be looking at the camera.
Right.
Because ideally, when I'm looking at them, I'm looking away from the camera.
Right. Ideally, the person speaking should be the one right by the camera. That way, because that's usually who you're looking at, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So if they would automatically do it that way, or if there was some way that I could like move around, like which ones I want,
mm-hmm.
then I could have the majority of people closer to the camera and then keep me far away.
I like it. Call them up. Make that suggestion. See what happens.
Okay. We'll see. But I think there's also a way that you can just remove yourself from the picture altogether.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what I've been missing.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of us have been missing. I'd love to just take myself off of there, you know, because you get kind of self-conscious watching yourself.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. You know? But then you got to remember, I mean, just don't forget that you're on camera.
Like, yeah, that's
cause
true.
Because you can't see yourself. You can't pick your nose because everybody else is going to see it.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. So one thing a lot of people don't realize is that you can actually record your Zoom meetings from your end. So you know that the person who set up the meeting, they can record the call. But you can actually record the call as well by hitting, of course, the record button. And that's a great way to, if it's something you need to take a lot of notes for, that way you can pay attention to what's going on, not be distracted by taking notes, and you can go back to it later for the note taking if you want to.
Yeah, and a good tip actually to go along with that, as you're taking notes on topics, put a timestamp in there.
Right.
You know, so
that way, if it's an hour and a half long meeting, you know, okay, 43 minutes in is where this happened.
Yeah, because otherwise your hour and a half meeting just turned into 3 hours because you're listening to it again for a second time.
Extra credit. You get extra credit. You can make annotations on screen. I don't know if a lot of people know this. You know that there's a chat window that you can make comments off to the side, but you can actually enable what's called the whiteboard annotation tool, and that allows everybody who's participating in the call to make comments or drawings or type things on screen as appropriate for the call, for the meeting. So that's kind of a way for everybody to participate. You know, no, I think, you know, draw a little circle around something. I think this should go over there and not over there, that kind of thing if you're have a map on the screen or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so if you're doing something like drawing diagrams or Venn diagrams or, well, those are kind of boring, but, you know.
Vin Diesel diagrams.
You know, actually, kind of along the lines of this whiteboard idea, my wife and I actually found an app, and I forgot the name of it. But it's an app that you can play one-on-one games with somebody else, and it turns the camera on, and you can see the camera, so you can see the other person. And one of the games is actually like Pictionary, essentially.
Okay.
So like it'll show me a word, and then I draw the picture, and then it shows up on my wife's phone as I'm drawing it. And then that way you can play games with people remotely.
Oh, that's really cool.
And still see them. Yeah.
So one of the things, everybody knows you can share your screen on Zoom. So if you're trying to show somebody how to use an app or something on your screen, a PowerPoint presentation, you can actually selectively share your screen, which is something that a lot of people don't know. So in other words, you can pick just the app. Let's say it's PowerPoint. You only want to share PowerPoint, and you don't want anybody to see the QuickBooks app that you also have up and that has all your personal account information on there. I mean, most people would be smart enough to just quit that app. But if you didn't, if you needed to have it up for some reason, you can actually selectively just share the app that you want people to see, and everything else will be hidden. So that's something that is useful.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're running a meeting. The other thing you can do is actually just share part of your screen. So let's say you just want to share the upper left-hand corner of your screen for some reason. You can using Zoom settings, draw a little square around the section that you want to share, and then that's the only thing that gets seen.
Interesting. Okay, so that way you could have, like, you know, something that you can see in reference, and, like, if you need to move it over so other people can see it, that's one way to do it.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. Another thing that you can have fun with backgrounds. So let's say you there's a lot of backgrounds actually built into Zoom where you can, you know, you can be at the beach, or you can be, you know, on some fancy island somewhere. There's a bunch of different backgrounds that you can pick just by clicking it, and it replaces your room behind you with whatever the background is. That's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, it is a cool feature.
This is a nice thing, especially for people who are a little unsure about their looks. There's actually a function in Zoom called Touch Up My Appearance, where if you click on that, it'll smooth your skin. It'll kind of give you, like, it's almost like having a makeup artist, a digital makeup artist, kind of give you a once over there so that you look good on camera.
Nice.
It's super subtle, I hear. So it's not like really dramatic, but just enough to make you look a little bit better.
Really? Maybe I will consider putting my pretty face on if I can filter it like Snapchat.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to go all Snapchat and, you know, look like a beast or something.
Yeah.
But that's another thing, you know. So if you couple that with actually putting like some nice clothes on, you know, most people are aware enough that if they're at a work meeting, even though they're at home, you probably got to change out of your jammies.
Yeah.
You know, and or at least from the top up, because that's the part that you'll see on camera.
Well, yeah, and if you are only going to do the top up, make sure you close out of the video before you get up and walk away.
Before you stand up, yeah. Like John Krasinski always does at the end of his videos.
Yep,
gets up
exactly.
And he's got a tutu on or something. So yeah, definitely put some cool clothes on. But, you know, as far as the angle goes, that's something else a lot of people don't really consider is the angle of the camera to your face. Ideally, you want the camera to be at eye level with you. You don't want to be too low and people are looking up your nose or too high. People do say that, you know, putting the camera a little higher is slimming. So maybe you do want to do that. I don't know, but yeah. It might be hard to get your laptop up higher unless you've got a separate camera on a tripod or something like that where you can adjust that kind of thing. But try to have it at eye level.
Yeah. And also I've been told too, if you're in a professional setting, at least, cause you know, if it's just you and your friends, it's, you know, whatever you guys want to do, but in a professional setting where you've probably got a lot of people on the call, you want to try and make your image almost as if you were getting a headshot taken.
Yeah.
You know, so like your professional, like your LinkedIn photo where it's, right. You know, your shoulders and your head.
That's what fills the screen.
Right. That's what you want because you want people to actually see your face, even if your, you know, screen is really small. You don't want it to be like this big giant room and then just little tiny,
tiny you way in the back. And you know, then lighting. You just want to make sure that it's well lit, that you're not all dark. There's one person on our calls all the time who always sits in a fairly dark room, and you kind of see this like dark blob, and you hear a voice coming from it. You can't really see who it is.
Yeah, don't sit in front of windows.
Yeah.
Well, don't sit
with the windows behind you.
Yeah, there you go. That's the right way to say it. Yeah, if you want to sit in front of the window so that natural light comes in and shows on your face, like that's a good
way
to
cool,
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that, you can. They make these little ring lights. It's a round circle shaped light, and you can get them for like $10 or so on Amazon. And they're battery operated, and they just clip to the top of your laptop, so that the camera's in the middle, and you can turn that on, and it just lights your face in a nice even way with no shadows and stuff. And so. If you do a lot of these Zoom meetings, which a lot of people are going to, it might be worth investing in a little ring light.
I'm going to have to step up my Zoom game.
You are going to have to step. First thing you're going to have to do is actually show your face, Steve. Actually show your face. So.
Step one, show your face.
Well, listen, this has been a great show. Thanks so much for joining us. We're gonna have to call it a day here at this point, but check us out at heinoshomeshow.com. If there's something you'd love us to talk about, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. heinoshomeshow.com, or you can find us at accuratemtg.com. We'd love to hear from you there as well. Until next week, we'll see you at Heino's Home Show.